of the crop.
Welcome to the 175th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording this on the Tuesday evening after Arsenal's draw at Watford, which will be discussed soon enough, no doubt. It's 2 days before the opening Europa League game of the season away at Eintracht Frankfurt. Just to mention that Laith Youssef is now heavily involved with what we call the digital side of the Gooner and is hosting a sister podcast available on YouTube on Gooner Fanzine TV channel and other places you can get details of in his numerous tweets on the Gooner account. This monthly version, though, remains as it was, once a month during the season, because not only is less more, I simply don't have the time to be recording one of these every time Arsenal play. With that, it is on to some brief panel intros. First up, a man who has no need for an introduction, but formalities decree he gets one. It's the founding father of the Gooner and one of our regular podcast panellists. A very warm welcome to Mr. Mike Francis.
Good evening, everyone.
Next up, an always welcome occasional guest, as the man who oversees the PR for the England cricket team. He's had an eventful summer. You're still doing it, aren't you?
Kind of.
To say nothing of his continuing contribution to the Arsenal Supporters Trust, it's a pleasure to welcome back Mr. Tim Payton.
Good evening.
And last but not least, making his second appearance on the podcast panel, and hopefully not the last, he's the Arsenal's very own Swiss Ramble in terms of his ability to dissect the club's financial situation, which he does on a regular basis on behalf of the Arsenal Supporters Trust, where he was a board member for several years. It's good to say good evening to one of my favourite straight talkers, Mr. Simon Hill.
Evening.
So what we do, gents, is we ask our audience for questions, and approximately 70% of those came in were pretty much the same damn question. But anyway, I'm going to whip through them to give name checks, and then we'll get on to the subject matter. Firstly, Pete Mountford, Twitter at PM by the Sea. Lives down in near Brighton, as I recall. Quite simple, the pros and cons of whether Unai Emery should be given more time or not. Jonathan Houseman, do we trust Raul and Edu to do the right thing and pull the trigger on Emery before top four is too late? And Bocky Balboa, or the Box 69 on Twitter, does Emery need to go for us to move forward as a club? And from email sent by Fishpie, question, Emery. Gone by Christmas. So, gentlemen, it's in the wake of the performance at Watford, there are already calls for the head of the manager. Is this realistic? Is it going to be any different this season?
Okay, I'll go first because I've got a feeling I know where everyone else will go. Up until Sunday, I'd say, I was like, I can't believe people are calling for him to be out already. And I thought, you know, Wenger was given donkey's years, obviously far too long in most people's opinion. And like, here we are wanting to crucify our new manager after barely a year or just over a year. You know, we all thought it was going to be a difficult first manager after Wenger. Got to give him time, got to give him transfer markets. And, you know, he had a reasonably good first season, fell away at the end, but, you know, we probably didn't expect much more than we got. And, you know, then we went out and spent some money and I was like, OK, now we'll really see what he's got. And I watched Sunday's game and my wife said to me, I haven't seen you in this bad a mood after a football game for ages. And I was going, it feels like nothing has changed. It felt like we were watching Wenger again. And it was like, and in some ways it was worse. I mean, the playing out from the back was like just ridiculous. And surely that's coming from him. And so I am now on the beginning to move towards the thinking that, yeah, you know, maybe we've just not got the right man here, or maybe he's just not going to work out. I'm not ready to pull the trigger quite yet, but if we carry on like that, by Christmas I will be.
Okay. So it's got a stay of execution from Mr. Francis. I mean, Tim, do you see the defensive solidity of the side improving under Emery's coaching?
It doesn't appear to have improved at all. Whether it's got worse or whether it's just that after a year of watching it, it kind of seeped into your bones and you just shiver earlier and faster. I mean, I'm hardwired to say, don't be ridiculous, Arsenal don't get rid of a manager 4 weeks into his second season. But I think that's partly having been conditioned to the way the club became with Arsene Wenger, who clearly carried on for years and years too long. Interesting, I do think some people are reacting very strongly against Emery. You actually, there's an overlap with they were very strong defenders of Wenger, and I almost wonder if they're counterbalancing themselves now or kind of making up for past sins. My instinct is that you should give a guy a bit longer, but as a gentleman sitting to my left will say, and if you read all his excellent financial analysis, it's all about getting in the Champions League. And I think if in, you know, November, December, Arsenal were kind of looking like they might just scrape it, but it needs a bit more, I could see them pulling the trigger to do that. The other thing that haunts me to this day is particularly when, you know, a manager that a few people have heard of called Jürgen Klopp was out of work, sitting by the phone, and Liverpool were ruthless. And actually, that's the one phone call that probably makes the difference between the American owners of Liverpool and the American owners of Arsenal. The clubs operate at about the same financial strength, about the same setup. They just took a bolder call to get an exceptional manager in. So you just do wonder whether in, you know, the next few weeks there's a Mr. Allegri sitting out there. I think it's the one name that you think, you know, could be brought in during a season. And whereas for the last 15 years I'd have said, don't be stupid, Kev, we don't change managers mid-season. Just think now, we've got an agent-led setup with sort of Raul and Edu. Although, interestingly, Raul was in on the interview process and a supporter of Emery, but we'll probably not know whether he was the lead voice in supporting for that or whether he got cajoled into it, because there was clearly a swerve away from Arteta for one reason or another. So, the final thing I'll say, moving in, it does look, I think when you lose the confidence of the fan base, it's really hard to get it back, and because people can say, well, you can start winning, well, sure, but it just feels like, particularly after this weekend, the doubts have become bigger than that. So watch this space, I'd say.
Simon, I mean, presumably if Emery is given to the end of a season, there's no payoff, because as we understand it, there is this cutoff whereby he might do an extra year, but there's no obligation for the club to give him that. We may not have that right, but that's the understanding.
I thought that was probably based on Champions League.
Right, so if he doesn't make Champions League, then he goes without any...
Just a guess, but for instance, Moyes had that clause and they sacked him the day after. Yep. They didn't qualify. They still had to pay him a lot of money, but it was reduced, and it appears...
Peanuts!
Increasingly...
It's peanuts, in the scheme of things. You know, his salary is peanuts. You said a really interesting thing, actually, and it reminded me of what Arsene used to say, which is the fans will ultimately decide my fate, which is part of that one out there, seeing this is a fanzine show. You know how I like the fans to get
an
vocal.
Empty seats.
And, yeah, exactly. So I think the fans will decide again. I maintain last year we saw something of a change, a reaction, I think. I can't remember the game it was at home. Everyone said they were watching Raul and Vinay, and they were like faces in their hands. And then suddenly we strung a series of results together. I think it was against Man U, wasn't it? And I can't remember the game it was where it was just like everyone said, no, never again. We can't ever see this. And we went on a great little run, and then we fell apart again horrendously. And we're still horrendous. I mean, we're even more horrendous now. Someone's created a stat. Was it 10 more penalties than any other team? What? How can you have 10 more penalties than any other team that you've given away? It's nuts. More insane. It's insane.
Over what period of time?
I can't remember.
I think it's 10 since the start of last season we've given away. Ten more
than the next team.
Yeah.
What was
something
like that? We've had more shots against our goal in the Premier League this season than any other team.
Yeah, that was stuff that Arsenal came out with. I tell you, it was just like, it's insane. It's insane how bad we are. More errors. Every goal, all four goals that we've let in were errors. Leno, error. Penalty, Luis, error. you know, Socrates, Jesus Christ, what was that? And then Louise, another penalty. All four. It's like, what's about me, Amy?
He's given away more penalties in his Arsenal career than his entire Chelsea career.
But then again, he had a midfield in front of him in at Chelsea. He's so exposed.
Yeah, but he's only been it 5 games.
Okay, I agree.
So, I mean, you know, Mustafi's nowhere to be seen. I mean, it's not like he's...
We'll see him certainly Tuesday next week against Forest.
Is he going to be the saviour?
And maybe even on Thursday. It's possible.
Mustafi, you know. No, so, I mean, put a context on it. I mean, it is unprecedentedly rubbish. There's no other word for it.
I'm going to ask you a straight question.
When I came here last time...
Yeah.
In fact, we'd said as much then, I think. I mean, we were saying, like, you know, this guy's got to be toast because we're just so hopeless at defending. How can you, you know...
Yes, he had a whole season to improve.
Yeah, we said, like, the second time he plays teams, he'll be better. Mm. And it's the same tactic that does us, a high press. Mm. Jilly. Mm. It's ridiculous. So, from a being a fan, watching football, having an opinion on the football team, it's just no contest. He's just... rubbish. Sorry, it's just rubbish.
Right. So,
and no one knows what our style is. It's like, what do we do with the ball? It's like, occasionally, you know, it's sort of.
Well, we try and get it forward. That's what we try and
do. Sort of moves about a bit,
but, you know. So play it on the floor.
He can't communicate his style or his approach.
Well, that's the other thing. There was an interview put out on YouTube by Arsenal with Emery answering the fans' questions. Now, in all fairness, they also subtitled the interviewer. But I think that was a sop towards the fact they had to subtitle Emery. Now, my question is he communicating to the players in Spanish? Is he communicating to them in English? If it's the latter, do they understand what he wants?
Well, there was a story in one of the papers last week. Was it last week or week before, perhaps? Where there was... it was like two lines in the middle of a page story which said, players are confused by his tactics.
Oh, it was Alan Smith.
It was Alan Smith.
Actually, that's become a bit more than a little story.
I sort of read over it and didn't really think anything of it. And then it's only like since the Watford game, I suppose, that sort of came back into my subconscious and go, I wonder whether that's really, there is a problem there. Then you watched the interview with him after the game on Sunday and you were like, what?
You didn't understand it.
I thought, yeah, you've got to give people some latitude, I grant you. You know, he's from overseas, Spanish.
But
he's been here a year.
He's learning
and
his English.
Gone backwards.
He's learning his English out of a book rather than talking to English speakers. That's what it looks like to me. He's picked up more vocabulary, but he's not actually... Like, when you see a foreign player go to Liverpool or Manchester and they pick up the accent,
yeah,
that's not happening with Emery. You know, he's not speaking to English people who are improving his spoken English. So
Leno came out with something today saying, oh, the change in the goal kicking rules has made it more difficult. I mean, what, we were crap at it last year. We're just even more crap now.
It should be easier now.
Burnley, which they started hoofing it, didn't they? Do you know, everyone, when we were like getting battered by Burnley at home, hanging on.
And there were cheers when we did.
Everyone was going, like, hurrah, because we just hoofed it. And then he's scored goals from it.
But against Watford, I'd love to say the stats in that second half. We hoofed it 3 or 4 times, yeah? And I reckon at least 2 of those times we got the ball on the second ball.
Yeah.
Every time we passed out from the back, they had it before we got to the halfway line. We gave it away.
We've got these speedsters. We've invested in speedsters up front for the hoof.
Mm. Yeah.
On the press. And so...
But coming back to the Emery and his communication, I think this will lead to his downfall quicker. Because he can't give any sense of... There's no sense of buy-in from us as fans because it's almost like he hasn't got a personality. And if you go back, everybody knows what Klopp stands for. It's kind of larger than life. He kind of feeds off the energy of the crowd. Guardiola's a bit more intellectual, very intense and demanding. Pochettino's got that kind of creating a vent against us, which we've seen. But all of the big managers, they have a brand, don't they? A personality. Wenger had plenty of brand and personality at the end. And I think the
That's not just vital for holding our kind of attention. That's how you hold a squad of 20 millionaires, yeah, which you're trying to impress.
Exactly.
And I just look at him and you think, if he worked for a bank, he wouldn't be an investment banker. He'd be the manager at a branch at Pinner, wouldn't he? He's just a middle manager, unfortunately. And I feel like the big problem was that he's a transactional signing. He was a manager, but it was almost like he knows how to get into the Champions League. Mm. Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter this week that was because he didn't do very well in Spain and had to keep winning in the Europa League, not the Champions League. Mm. But it's sort of like, if we did get us in the Champions League, okay, we'd have a bit more money, but what would he then bring to it? That's what I think will be his downfall. I just think he's like, there's not enough there.
Well, there's no sign of any adaptation, no sign of any change from what happened last year to what's happening now. It seems to have, anything, have gotten worse. And we come back to this thing about Raúl, as clearly, we'll talk about the transfer window, I'm sure, but he's really made a statement with that window, and he's trying to create a brand, I think, about what it is to be an Arsenal player. Because, you know, it's not an easy sell, you would think, in a lot of ways, potentially, but actually he's created a bit of a sell. And there are things that you can set it off. And it's about being young and buzzy and fun and japes on the training ground with my mates at Bamiyan Co. And there is an image and a thing. And it's London, which is really attractive. And the other clubs in London are either, up until now, have been either very, very miserable, as in Spurs, or working for someone who might frighten you, like, in West London. So yeah, there's a gap in the market. And you can see what he's tried to do, and he's brought players in. He's not going to sit there and watch this guy throw it and upset his players and damage his brands, because it's Raúl that's theoretically, and Edu that are responsible for the football brand as such.
But it wasn't a transfer window, and I'd be interested in what you think. They seem to be quite aggressive financially, you might have screwed that. But it wasn't a transfer window that was wholly focused on getting into the Champions League this year. They spent £30 million on a defender who can't join for a year, and then will probably take a while to adapt. Yeah. They spent £75 million on a very, very good talent from France, but clearly was going to take a year or two, you know, they always do to acclimatise.
I was going to pull you up earlier, actually. I don't think it's the threat of not being near top four that will make people panic. It's the threat of not being top six that will make people panic. Because this club has to be Europa League. That is really, really, really the bottom line. If we ain't Europa League, then that's another 30 million out of the numbers. And they fought like billio to try and get it on an even keel. That blows a great big hole in it. It sure blows the players, it blows the sponsors. That if we're languishing at 7th and 8th and you know, Leicester and God knows who else are sort of like trouncing away from us.
Who else it would be?
Well,
you know,
the one thing that might, and this is interesting, coming back to that break clause about Emery, I can make a case for Emery scraping into the Champions League with about 62, 64 points. Because I think after the two good clubs at the moment, it really is a mixed bag, isn't it, amongst the others. Look, United's squad is as much of a mess as ours. You know, Chelsea squad, when you're relying on youngsters, they'll have ups and downs. There's not big enough squads amongst the Leicester or the Wolves or the West Ham. So, you know, it's almost interesting about, and Simon's probably right, that when you pay him £6 million a year, it's peanuts to get rid of him against the branding agent. You'd sell, you know, in the number of tickets that you sell. Yeah, exactly. But what if a bugger is kind of disliked by every Arsenal fan, but does get us into the Champions League and kind of, you know, trips the third year of the contract, what do you do then? You know, a ruthless club would say, thank you, you've got us in the Champions League, just now you're off. Mm. Now we're bringing the manager
of
the Champions
League
ready.
Well, that's the original question.
Are we ruthless?
Are we going to fire him?
Well, I think, I'm not sure we are ruthless.
Who's we?
Well, the club.
You mean Raúl?
Yeah, well, maybe he is and he did as much as he could. But let's think, we hardly talk about him anymore, and maybe he can't do anything, but we've still got some, you know, geezer sitting on his arse earning £350k a week. We've still got the disappeared Mustafi. We're still probably paying a considerable sum of Mkhitaryan in Roma. But you could turn it around and say, well, at least we got Mkhitaryan into Roma. At least they did something about it not being Mustafi anymore. But I'm I suppose, again, this is the manager. But ultimately, any club that has five captains isn't ruthless. It's just an indecisive mess.
Yes.
Well,
I mean,
that's the only manager that has five captains. It's not a club.
Well, he's not the manager. He's the head coach.
All right. Any coach that has five. It's the coach's decision about captains.
I wonder what Edu thinks of that.
I mean, Rule, whatever you say about it, there was over 20 transactions in and around the first
game. It doesn't necessarily mean you're ruthless. It could mean just coining in lots of commissions with agents.
I mean, let's just take a look at that transfer window and work out roughly what we think the net spend was.
Oh, shit. I knew you were going to say that. Bleep that one out.
Well, I've worked it out around about... And this is before the Mkhitaryan deal.
You and 50 other million people have got a different number.
Right.
There's no way you will know.
Right. Okay. But my guesstimate is 20 million net spend.
20 million net spend. Good Lord.
Because of the instalments, you know.
Oh, well, you mean cash out?
Yes.
Yeah, cash out immediately. I don't know. I mean, look, everyone will come up with different figures, and you don't have to go to the internet. Look very hard, transfer market, all these people that pretend to know. You know, there's one that does the salaries. If you add up all the salaries of the Arsenal squad, it only comes to 100 million. So who's getting the other 130?
I haven't had three, but I don't know who else is getting the rest. I mean, the cleaners are on a million each. I mean, seriously.
So
everyone.
No point in speculating.
No, there is a point in speculating, but you're going to accept that you're going to have quite a big margin for error. And when you've spent 140 million quid, which I think most people will accept is a fair number for what we've spent on new players coming in, you're going to have quite a big bit of leeway on that, especially as you've got to book the agents' fees, which I know Tim's talked about might well be a lot higher. You book those as part of your cost on top of the headline number if someone's released it. So you've got to allow for a fair bit of swing in that 140 one way or the other. Ditto when we've sold. I mean, I've never known a player sold for anything between 27 and 40 million.
Well, that's with add-ons. That's with add-ons. Basically, it's 27 basic.
Yeah, but the 40 million was regularly quoted the first couple of days.
No, it's up to 35, as I understand.
I think they've got pulled back to 27.
Ever since sort of like through numbers out. So, I mean, and then even someone as humble as Biak, if that's even how you pronounce his name, has had like huge ranges between, was it 4 or was it 10? I mean...
Why did they? Why did they sell Iwobi? Because that's quite a statement in some ways. Someone who's
because this
is the issue about how you don't want to make a loss for another year because of those FFP rules.
It was really late in the day. I mean, let's be honest, it was deadline day, so you could say, "Oh, yeah." I think probably what you've seen something there is, you know, is an opportunist, as it were. Rule's aware of the numbers. He knows what the budget and the cash flows are. They all know it. You know, well, you know, you're in charge of how you spend that money, but if you do manage to generate a profit, yes, it would be very helpful.
Because of this 5-year assessment of profit for FFP rules.
Yeah, so they'll find exactly which Arsenal were in trouble on. And now, they've certainly finessed that for a couple of seasons, FFP is a worry. So I think, yeah, it quite clearly is like, you know, we will be a club that will book profits again. I think that's quite clear from the type of players that they're trying to buy. You know, that was quite the more interesting thing for me. I mean, there was this sort of shifted to youth. Some very high prices. You know, we were saying separately, you know, 30 million or whatever it is on a centre-back who's only played a handful of games and you've loaned him back. 72 for Pepe, which various people said was way too much for a player...
But in that profile, but if he's going to be good, he can be potentially sold on for 150 million.
No, but it's the Martinellis, isn't it? That's where the profits are lurking and around the players that you're putting up in your youth team squads. Yeah.
But is the model going forward that we will be a selling club?
I think they will look to sell regularly because it's a good
way... The way Dortmund do, for example.
Yeah, well, you have to. I mean, it's a good way of plugging your... Yeah, it's the club that tries to spend all the money on the team, so it tries to basically break even. And within that comfort, you're going to get it wrong because you're going to have years where you're not in the Champions League, or your income's up and down. And so, you know, selling players is a good way of fixing yourself out of finances. All the teams have done it. We've seen Chelsea do it when they struggled to be in the Champions and Europa League. We saw City doing it quite a few years ago when they were out. Yeah, everyone.
Well, I mean, Liverpool turned around Coutinho and went and bought Van Dijk, which was the masterstroke in many ways of what delivered them Champions League.
So come back to the original question: how much have we spent? I'm happy to go with somewhere around the 140 mark on what we've spent out. What we get back, I think I went for somewhere around the 50 mark.
Yes, but obviously the fact that the instalments mean that in terms of actual outgoing...
How much has actually gone out?
Yes.
Well, it's very unlikely that we'd have paid anything out on the boy that was lent overseas.
I think it's very token.
And I think the French let it be known that the vast bulk of Pepe's fee was on the Never Never.
Because of their own FFP situation.
I don't know. They'd have to put the whole profit. No, it's just the deal that we've struck. I mean, I think someone said it was like 4 lots of 13 and like 52 on the drip and 20 out front or something like that. Mm-hmm. Tim texted me that night and said, blimey, how did you work that out? I think probably it was around the 45, 50 million mark that we spent.
Right, so basically we spent the cash we had.
Yeah, I mean, it's on a net spend of around 90 to 100 million, I think we probably spent about half going out straight away.
Mm. But we've used the cash a bit more than the amortisation and the future wages because we spent bigger, which brings back to your point that we probably need to start selling to almost keep churning along.
The year just gone to 19, we won't know until the end of the year, but we're looking at a big loss, I mean, probably around the £50 million mark. And the way FFP works, we can count the big profits that we made from in 2018 when we sold all those players. But yeah, 120 million of profit, recorded a huge 70 million profit. You can count that in your FFP years, but you are under pressure from UEFA to sort of right your ship. So at some point, you need to book some profit, and selling 50 million quid worth of players is practically all profit, because none of those players are in the books for anything much, really. We'll put Arsenal into profit in 2020.
Right.
So that's a few. But come back to it. You know, the club is spending everything it's got. It's got this 20 million of debt that it has to finance every year. It can't afford to have a year where it doesn't make Europa League football. I know that sounds pathetic. Seriously, that is like... That would,
yeah. Because the wage bill.
No, the gate. The gate was. Yeah, the gate would. You would be able to justify the gate. You forget we all have those Europa League games in your season tickets. Mm. They're in the platinum tickets. You know, that's a big chunk. There's still a big chunk of money rising on all those games. You take another hit on your commercial income, almost certainly from not being in the Europa League, and you lose the TV money that you get from the Europa League itself, which is like 25 million pounds. So that's a big thing for Arsenal. Profits are a good way of steadying the ship.
Well, let's talk about the players that did arrive during that window in our initial impressions. I mean, the standout figure in terms of discussion at the moment is David Luiz. Now, the question I've got here, in fact, I think there's...
Is it third time unlucky?
Well, I mean, I'll just read a couple of... I mean, my question is he more Mustafi than Koscielny in terms of Luiz's contribution to the team?
Well, the big screw-up this summer was the club misreading the Koscielny situation. They clearly thought that they would get the final year of his contract out of him.
And they would not have got any other new defender.
I think what caught them out, that's partly why they did the Saliba deal and didn't mind loaning him back, because they thought they had Koscielny and it was kind of like a bridging option, and then he just didn't get on the plane. And you know, how much he did the dirty on us, how much that's poor communication between coach and player or Raul's job, but clearly something in the system went badly wrong there, but it caught them out and left them on the hop. I don't think they were going to do anything about it, I think, until some of the pre-season games when it looked a bit of a mess. And they do now. They're very tucked in with one or two of the agents. One is Kia Jubikan, his player is David Luiz. And, you know, it's very easy to engineer this day. David Luiz was suddenly went from saying that the setup was great and Lampard was a breath of fresh air to being on strike and not playing for them 3 days later. It's quite ridiculous. Mike, is this hindsight? At the time, I thought, that's probably not a bad deal for $8 million for a couple of years and what he can deliver. But I always have this nagging doubt. When a rival, when another big club wants to get rid of a player, what is happy to
Mikhail
let
Mikhail Silvestre.
I was going to say Mkhitaryan more recently.
Beware the big six club.
Look at
when it occasionally happens amongst the other clubs. Big clubs only get rid of players they don't want. Why?
Giroud's been good for bloody Chelsea.
But that was different. Right?
What do you mean he's won them an FA Cup and a Europa League?
I was on the podcast last month and I was just after the start of the season and I was asked about Luis and I said pretty much what you just said. I thought, well, $8 million? I think that's a reasonable deal. You know, he's got a player of experience. But then to come back to your earlier point, Kev, he's playing in a different team. We all knew he's got a mistake. He's a mistake waiting to happen every game. If you're going to be put under pressure, you're going to make that mistake more often. And boy, we've been put under more pressure, especially on Sunday. I mean, you know, we barely got out of our own half in the second half of that game. So, yeah, you know, mistakes are going to happen.
He's not the sort of player that sort of organises and leads, is he? He's a flamboyant defender, which is a polite way of saying he makes mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see him. At one point in the game, he was sort of trying to G them up and pull them in a position, but it didn't kind of feel Tony Adams authoritarian. It wasn't fucking get over there and mark him.
He was trying to.
It was just, come on, boys, come on, we can do this.
I think he was a bit more of an organiser than that.
A little, yeah, I know. It wasn't Tony Adams.
My one comment would be that I don't think you would have got into the training ground on Monday morning and it would have been quiet. I think Louise would be one of the first to say, what the is going on?
From a positive way?
Because one of the things you read about him is he
can be very destructive in a squad if he's not happy.
Well, I mean,
but maybe that's what we need now.
Yeah, you need a bit of destruction in that the way it's played. Like, you've got Lino saying, like,
he's the kind of player Wenger would never have signed.
No.
Because he is.
He's outspoken.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he challenged.
He's outspoken. I think it was what he needs. I mean, you know. Blimey, God, what's Aubameyang? Poor old Aubameyang thinking is.
What have I got to do here?
What have I got to do? It's a conversation we've had before when we've had great strikers and crap defence, isn't it, really? Since we've carried this with us for a long time. No, he's not Mustafi. Come on, guys. Mustafi is.
He's
Mustafi.
Better than that.
Mustafi is. Out of a league of his own. That air kick against Brighton or whatever it was, a Palace. And
maybe we should be moving Luiz into the midfield.
We'll play Chambers. Holding's back, isn't it? Yeah,
I think we just.
I think Holding's going to come back in.
Exit Xhaka, don't we? Really, he's the heartbeat of that midfield.
He's a captain.
We're
going to
have five.
No. We've only got one.
He's still looking round for the other four, the sound of things.
But that's interesting. Is, you know, we've got players coming back. So we've got Holding coming back. You've got Bellerin, you've got Tierney. You know, what are we going to do at the back? Are we going to go to three at the back?
Right, well, okay. I'm going to bring in a couple of listeners' contributions. Mike McDonald on Twitter. Chambers and Holding are best friends. I'd imagine that they'd be very motivated to play together. Maybe this happens on Thursday. When Bellerin and Tierney return, this could be an all-British-speaking back four, which may provide a good basis for better understanding. Thoughts? Question mark. And then we've got Loftus-Cormack, or Cormack-Loftus, I'm not sure which, but anyway. We projected so much hope onto Holding, Bellerin and Tierney. Really hope it works out, but it's asking a lot for three players returning from serious injuries. It could take a while. I think Chambers deserves a start ahead of Socrates as it is. So there is a question. Is it personnel or is it the manager's tactics that are responsible for the defensive weakness of the
tactics.
Team?
Going straight in. Tactics.
Okay.
We've changed the people on the deck of the Titanic so many times and it still sinks. Guess what? Right. It's the captain in the iceberg.
I said to someone on Monday, I said it's institutional in the club. It's not. You know, I'm not even sure it's down to the manager.
You know, like, it's just the culture.
It's just the culture that the club has got.
That is our identity now. People are asking, what is the Arsenal identity? You saw it on Sunday in the second half.
Calamity defending. Sell Coleen, start playing in gloom. We've got to break this cultural voodoo.
It's kind of what it felt like. You know, as I said earlier, it felt like it was a throwback to some of the Wenger era, where it was just, it didn't matter what was going on the pitch, we were going to still play the same way. And it kind of felt like that. And I was like, geez, is it just institutional within the club now? It's so ingrained that it's going to take years to change.
Yeah.
Oh, that worries me.
I think it does come
I think a coach would change it. Not the club culture. If you've got Mourinho in, or arguably Allegri in, the first thing I would imagine those guys would do would say, we're going to set up this team to be a bit more solid.
Less goals.
Yeah. So I don't think it's cultural. I think it is.
It was slightly tongue-in-cheek.
Well, but, okay. You know, but, you know, so there is a solution.
I was looking for excuses.
Okay.
There is. And it's quite interesting. When players come into the team, like, I can't pronounce his name, but the boy from Real Madrid, when he first came out, he was really noticeable. He was calling for the ball all the time. Calling for the ball.
Ceballos.
Yeah, always calling for the ball. I thought, when do you ever see the midfield of Arsenal calling for the fucking ball? You don't, do you?
Well, Guendouzi does, actually.
Guendouzi comes to try and fetch it, and then
gives it away, yeah.
And then might not. But, yes, in fairness, he does. He does try and call it.
You're right. But he looked, this guy looked busy. He was like, look, give it to me, and I will do
that. Does the team do with the ball when it's got it? And then people say, well, there's no leadership in a team. And I think those are often words to describe a fundamental failing of tactics. It's just like run at them very fast with the ball.
Yeah, the midfield shape doesn't seem to exist in terms of the way we set up.
I don't think that's what causes a problem at the back.
Yes.
They end up signing not silly little balls about.
Well, we certainly don't have any idea of like what a first 11 would be or what settled setup would be. Mm. And that I think adds to this sense of headless chickens.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that was something I said in the podcast last year, was like, you know, that when we were getting a lot of criticism for the defence, and it was like, well, you know, we've had injuries upon injuries and we haven't had a settled squad, and you could argue the same exists now. You know, we're talking about three defenders we're all sort of suggesting, or is being suggested, could come in and be first choices. Well, you know, you do that, you drop Xhaka, you put Torreira and Guendouzi in, you've suddenly got a very different looking team. And maybe if you could give that team a run for a couple of months, we'd be talking differently.
I don't think it is about the defence. I think it's about the shape of the team.
When
you're shipping 30-odd shots, it's not down to your defenders to stop the 30-odd shots. It's the guys in front of them and around them. Yeah, it's a fundamental when you're shipping that many shots. Consistently, game in. It's just the whole way it's up.
Okay, I mean, we're running through the thoughts on the new signings. What are your impressions of Pepe?
Underwhelming. I think, what was the first game? You see, Newcastle, wasn't he? He came on a sub and cracked
a couple of shots.
Ran at a few people. Liverpool was probably his best game, wasn't it? And that was where he got a ball, ran at people, took shots. Disappointing couple of finishes. Very specific, clearly.
Yeah.
Very clear rule.
Told what to do.
What to do.
Yeah, he was happy then.
Sunday was anonymous in the second half. I mean, his movement off the ball, I even thought in the first half, I was like, he keeps coming towards the ball when he's got the pace to get in behind. Go and do that occasionally, you know, mix it up a bit. But he kept dropping deep. And
him or the coach, though?
Ooh. Well, this is it. You just don't know, do you? But, you know, I always felt, going back to Wenger's early days, a good player would be an intelligent player.
When you watch his YouTube highlights in France, the one thing that strikes you is his understanding with his fellow forwards. So presumably, we're going to have to hang on a bit and see if that develops.
Oh, he needs a lot more time. I mean, you know, he's a sort of lighter player of speed, skill, coming in out of the French league, and if we look. And, you know, if he could be half as good as Henri, we'd be happy. Mm-hmm. But even if you look, I mean, the first 6 weeks to 15 weeks of Lacazette, they were kind of like, not sure this guy's worth that price tag. Mm-hmm. Took him a year to really look settled and at home in the Premier League. Period. So many of them. So I think he was overhyped a bit, and the expectations were too high. And I was sure that, you know, well, we went after Zaha first of all, and he would have had much more of an impact in his first season at Arsenal than this guy would. What we've got to hope is that this guy actually, you know, does settle long term. Doesn't become a kind of Marshall, or you remember Marshall United, you know, someone that, you know, just doesn't totally click with the pace of the game in the Premier League and settling in London and so on. But you can't, I don't think it's, you can even get close to making a judgment after the amount of minutes.
You go back to the question about whether the structure of Arsenal is now different, and in which case, if you were at Chelsea, for example, the players count more than the coach, right? If he's not getting enough out of my player's got potential, you know, my player can be an Henry, or my player's, you know, can be a world star, then if my coach isn't doing it for me, he's out the door, because it's far cheaper and easier to replace than my star. And are we now going into that we should be going into that, in that direction. So
we should be following the Chelsea model.
Well, I say the Chelsea model, but lots of other teams.
Well, no, it's becoming a model of any big club now. Like I say, it's the old days of the kind of George Graham approach, where I'll stick you in the reserves, or I'll sell you, you know, I'll sell you down a division. I can destroy your career. I'm in charge. I'm the gaffer. That's completely gone now.
Yeah.
It's a sort of, you know, you're pampering these millionaires with a bit of psychology and trying to keep them interested. Yeah. I mean, Guardiola tries to do it, but it's not the Sergeant Major approach so much, is it? Right. It's an intensity that he does it through. Yeah. But it's a, you know, like you say, probably most of the Arsenal squad are now earning more than Emery.
Yeah.
So this is why Jose Mourinho can't find a job at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, with Mourinho, you take a big risk about whether or not, you know, if a first team has decided they don't like you and they're going to take you on, they get you sacked within 3 months, which is United to Mourinho.
Mm. It's so annoying. You could pick any one of these managers plying their trough in the Premier League. You get the feeling, you know, and they do a better job than we're seeing at the moment, that's my opinion. Give me a Wolves or a Watford or anyone. Blimey.
Right, well we have briefly discussed Ceballos, but I will put him in a different context. Can we play Ceballos and Ozil in the same starting 11?
Not in big games.
Okay. Well, that's
simple. That was a bad decision on the Sunday.
Was it to accommodate Ozil? Was Emery accommodating Ozil, making him feel better?
Possibly, but that's the last thing you should have been doing, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could... Even if you'd have thought it beforehand, the fact Watford had a new manager, you know that, you know, you've got to know that a team's going to be a little bit more up for it. You just said a word, actually, which was like the word I used a lot on Sunday, is there's no bloody intensity in our team. You know, we just played it. I mean, Maitland-Niles, who, you know, I still like because he's an Arsenal lad and that, but God, he's so laid back. Mm. Number of mistakes he made where you just went, just raise your game, just concentrate. And it's the lack of intensity and playing Ozil in that sort of game where you knew it was going to be, they were going to come out.
It was the first away game he'd started since November or something.
Yeah.
It just makes you wonder.
Well,
yeah, you almost wonder whether someone upstairs said, look, he's being paid £350k a week, you've got to use him sooner or later. Right. It almost feels like that, doesn't it?
Thursday would have been a good day to play.
Okay, well, let's move forward. And Simon Rose, a contributor to the Gooner, has tweeted, with Lacazette injured and Nketiah out on loan, how would we cope if Aubameyang got injured too? So we were discussing this before we started recording.
Well, it gets more difficult.
Yeah, he's
right. Manchester City are down to one defender. I mean, they definitely left themselves short of... centre forwards, but they're not really centre forwards, they're strikers,
technically Otamendi is a defender.
Yeah,
technically John Stones is a defender.
Yeah, well, he's injured today.
Was he injured?
Yeah,
John Stones. Bloody hell.
They're down to one.
So they're going to play Fernandinho.
But like you say, it could, you know, we left ourselves very narrow with goal scorers, although probably the idea is you were going to spread them around them more. and that Pepe would score a few.
Well, I think he'll play Pepe and Aubameyang clone.
Well, he might try that in the cup games.
But then you don't overplay him. No. But you've got to give him a chance to maybe try that position. I'm assuming the loan for Eddie to Leeds is locked down for a year and you can't bring
probably
him back. He does look quite good, doesn't he?
Apparently so. But I mean, there were always Martinelli did get on the bench for the first game and maybe even the second. He came on in one of them. So presumably we'll see what he's made of at least Tuesday next week.
And maybe Saka was on the bench, wasn't he, as well?
Now, is he a forward or a wide attacker?
I thought he was a forward. Well, I thought he could play both for us.
Mm. The fact that we don't really know.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to be quite, interesting watching.
Yeah, it would. I think if both were out, I think probably slip Pepe up there as being an Aubameyang in the place.
Mm. Okay. Bobby's playing well at the moment. Fox. Are they going to turn us over next Tuesday?
I've not followed it that
Or do they play their second team as well?
Yeah, they're sort of up and down.
We didn't discuss David Luiz when we were discussing the quality of the new arrivals.
We did. We started with him. Memory's gone.
There's something you want to say.
What I will put in, though, is the Mkhitaryan loan. Reputedly, Emery did actually like Mkhitaryan. You know, he was a player.
He picked him often enough.
He liked working with. So do you think that was a financial decision where basically Emery's keenness for the player was overruled?
Yeah, well, I thought with this transfer window, and I've said it, and you can come back on me a bit, but I really thought it was a transfer window that wasn't doing Emery any favours.
Right.
Now, he's only the head coach.
Mm.
We've called him, it's interesting, the mistake we slipped back to, we've been calling him the manager. But if you went back through this recording, we've called him the manager 20 times. He's the head coach, doesn't do transfer day. But I'll kind of repeat it because I think it's important. You know, would he have gone for such a raw talent as Pepe with a big spend? Would he have actually spent all that money on a central defender who isn't arriving in a year? A year's too late, you know, for Emery and the problems he has with back defence. Would he have lost Mkhitaryan? Because he does seem to like the experienced pros that will get you through. And maybe we are. You think under Rule we're transitioning to a younger, brighter talent. Right. I mean, probably by accident because they got banned from the transfer window. But Chelsea, clearly now, there's some kind of vibe going on there about the youngsters coming through. It fits very well with a manager like Lampard arriving as well, doesn't it? And perhaps Arsenal are kind of transitioning to that. But if they're doing that, then Emery won't be manager next year. And arguably, that you go back to your Arteta and say that's the sort of manager to come in, and you know, and next year with Saliba and Tierney will be fit and Bellerin, because I think people are expecting these guys to come back too quick. After these long-term injuries, it takes them 3 months. You know, they can't play every game.
Yeah, exactly.
takes a while, because Tierney was injured. When I actually looked at how many games he played, it almost made me think, is that signing we should be making?
And they nearly always have a breakdown afterwards.
Because you have to be very careful. We'll have to watch Bellerin and Holding, and this idea that they'll come back and play 20 in a row is not happening. But I didn't think it was a transfer window that was totally geared around Emery saying, I just need to improve next year.
Yes,
I think it's interesting, like, you know, what you say about the distinction between head coach and manager. And, you know, every club's, the decisions are largely made by people that are not the manager or the head coach. But the press and a lot of the fans just have not transitioned to that distinction yet. Maybe it's because we had Wenger for so long, who Wenger did have ultimate control. But you know, how many times have we picked up a paper or read a blog or whatever this season where they've gone, well, Emery spent a lot of money during the summer, he's got to justify it now. And it's going, well, actually, no, he didn't. The club did, and given him the resources, and maybe you've got to say you've got to work with them. But yeah, I just think it's you know, I don't know, modern fans modern football
but also
is so different.
Across the game, and I suppose ultimately this is why they get given a very large salary, is because they run with a very big risk. But actually, you know, if things don't go right, should you be going after Emery or should you be going after Rowe?
Yeah.
You know, but at the moment, all the mindset is you go after, you know, and it probably suits these football director types quite a lot to let it be like that, because they carry on for a few years.
Oh, the players.
I mean, I think they started to get on his case. Well, I say started. They definitely have got on his case increasingly. But the classic here is Ed Woodward up at Manchester United. Is what gone through four managers now, and you know, increasingly people are saying, "Well, hang on, maybe you're the problem, and the setup." Mm. Arsenal's problem, but we're getting it there, is that you know, in effect, we did start again.
If you look at
it was all Wenger who ran everything. Then it was Gazidis, Rao, and Sven, and then you know, and let's not forget because people talk about. You know, we barely mentioned Kroenke yet, but people kind of talk about this leadership, this aggression. They've made a big thing in their defence of the last few months about how they reset the club. But it wasn't proactive because he just walked out on them. Mm. I mean, that sod would still be going if he hadn't. Well, you know, I'm convinced of it. You know, the reset. But having done a reset, they kind of then had to do another one. Because Raul has reset in a very different way to how Ivan was reset.
Well, he got rid of Mertens, didn't he?
Yeah. And then brought in, you know, Adu, which I think partly is about, you know, sometimes I'm a bit cynical now, but I mean, watch these guys, how they're setting others up so that they can...
Put someone in between me and the long-term accountability. Yeah.
But actually, we've had an awful lot of change go on there. Now, you know, let's hope they're the right people. But there's no doubt you can see it. If it doesn't pick up, the one that will get chopped is Emery. For how fair that is, I don't know.
Mm. Okay. You know,
still, keep letting in goals.
I do actually think fair.
How can you even use that word?
No, it actually, as I said it, I realised. I said, I mean, you know, it is fair, which is whether Sharma should go with him or not. But you've got to at some point have some stability. And also, didn't we all probably think that you don't want to be? You want to be the manager that replaces the manager, and I'm going to use head coach now. You want to be the head coach that replaces the head coach that replaced Wenger, not the one that came afterwards. And I definitely see it. Some of the people that kissed Wenger's arse for far too long, I feel like they're almost making up for it by going too hard after Emery. It's almost like they're trying to prove, but they're not always a sucker.
Okay, and there are others who didn't like Wenger who are saying that our football doesn't look any different. So
I actually think the football has looked the same for years. Can't defend, goals go in at both ends, and no real sense of intensity or passion.
Yes, and there's some of us with longer memories who remember Arsenal's identity before Arsene, and one of the cornerstones of that was a very mean backline.
One nil to the Arsenal, the occasional trophy. I mean, we loved it. People now go on about these values, but we had a very different brand in the 80s.
Yeah. So when they start talking about Arsenal values,
it's bollocks. It's people who only watch us on TV.
Indeed. Quick question here: Aston Villa game Sunday. It's kicking off at 4:30. It's not on TV. Why can't we kick off at 3:00? Does anyone know? Is it because foreign TV or something? Is it scheduling for the...
Good question, I don't know.
I assumed we were on TV, I didn't realise we were.
Who else is playing on Sunday? Might be the other question.
Well, I don't know. Certainly, you know, someone's on TV who isn't Arsenal.
I don't know, it's a bit weird.
It's Europa League.
It's a Sunday game because we're playing on Thursday.
Yes.
I don't know why it would go.
It can only be TV abroad, that's my only thought. But you'd prefer a 3:00, wouldn't you, if you're not... You know, bound by TV kickoff time.
West Ham Man United at 2:00.
Right.
I don't know whether that's got anything to do with it, Arsenal Villa.
West Ham police angle, you know, or something?
To split the games a bit more, don't know.
Well, you wouldn't. Actually, having them closer together would probably be.
I thought the most likely reason is a police request about it's slightly staggering when people overlap on the tube, but it's a guess.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk about the Frankfurt and Forest games in terms of what we expect to see. They'll bookend that Sunday match against Villa. I think we might see a bit of a youth team against Forest, plus maybe Mustafi, Chambers and Martinelli, simply because we'll assume we can beat them at home and play a bit of a under-23 selection.
If you do that and Forest put out their first team, we'll lose.
Right.
Because... Senior pros, even a division down, will turn over
you know, in effect, an under 23 team that just isn't used to it.
So we're going to be playing some players Thursday, Sunday, and Tuesday.
But I agree with you that I think it, for the Forest game, it'll absolutely change everybody and put that sort of team out. Hmm. What's interesting, last year I thought he played too much of the first team in the Europa League early on, particularly. I think he was quite enjoying that winning run and everything. And also it goes back to the fact that he's kind of made his name as a specialist.
But we've probably got to this
in that competition.
It's quite an easy group.
It's not as easy.
Frankfurt have lost apparently some of their best players over the summer.
What, the ones that took them from within a penalty kick of the final?
Yes.
And it could well be. I've not followed that. But I still think Frankfurt, I mean, last year, I mean, us four could have played against, well, maybe not quite actually coming around this table.
Oh,
we are a little bit older than we all think, aren't we?
I just want to know what position you're putting him in.
Oh, on the ball. Just stand in front of the goal, Simon, and look at me. Oh, crap. But it really was weak last year. It's a little bit stronger. But he overplayed some of the senior pros. Yeah. But I think he got trapped. And I wonder now if you asked him, you know, were we going to win the Europa League, or were we going to qualify in the top four, or were we just trying to keep our options open for both and missed both by like 45 minutes? Well, in the end, we did miss both by 45 minutes. But, you know, I wonder if he might slightly modify that approach. Well, I think he has to, particularly up front.
He's got no option because he's got such a much more younger squad than he has. He hasn't got, you know, journeymen like he's El Nene, but it's a bit crueler than El Nene. But you know what I mean? He hasn't got all these squad players and the Mkhitaryans, you know, the ones that you can bring in or on your subs bench.
He's got Ozil now.
He's got kids.
Thursday and Tuesday.
Ozil won't mind going back to Germany. There'll be some tarp for him to pop up and see and, you know, make that one.
No one knows what Emery's first team is. He doesn't seem to know, so I think
But he's got Mustafi and Ozil.
He's got to play a younger profile team.
It's got to happen.
And we'll get the changing goalkeeper. Now, will he be a goalkeeper that is promised all the Europa Leagues? Will he play a semi-final?
Because it's not a high-profile name, is it? You know.
You wouldn't think so.
Interesting.
Who knows?
Although it didn't make any difference to the result, the thing that most appalled me that he did last year of anything was play Czech in the final. Because that was a final that was worth, 40, £50 million pounds to Arsenal.
That was weird.
And to me, you play your best team in a final like that when it really matters. And when you don't, when you kind of make a kind of sympathy pick or you know, and it can't even have been a deal with Czech because Czech started off as the Premier League goalkeeper, and Leno was a Europa League goalkeeper. But not to play your best thing. And in a way, when we gave up in the second half, I kind of feel like it was all represented by what we did with the goalkeeping position. And that, I just don't like that. But a lot of other people say, oh yeah, he was our best player in the final. That's not my point. My point is, why didn't we pick our best goalkeeper for a game that probably decided Emery's future?
Mm. Well, there are people who think Leno could have done better with the first couple of goals as it goes.
But I'm trying to almost get away from looking at if you think that Cech was Arsenal's best goalkeeper in last May, should have played the final Premier League games as well. My point is, you play your best keeper.
Yeah.
But now I would have thought that there's no doubt that there's a number one, and clearly I think you play the other keeper because he's got to get some experience in games. But if it really matters, because let's face it, unless we are really bad, you know,
we should get the last eight at least.
You know, we're the top seeded club in the competition.
I didn't realise that.
We got the highest coefficient, and you have to wait and see if the quality goes up a little bit with who comes down in the third place slots. Manchester United are there. Now, I think Manchester United can beat us on their day, can't they? Because they've got a good squad. Although, but it's not very much there.
You know, it's not very much there. I think that, you know, the odds on Arsenal reaching the final are about 3-1.
It's normally the teams that drop down, though.
It's the teams that drop down, though.
Yeah, although you could get someone unexpected.
You could, but yeah, the way the groups have worked out this year,
there are two strong teams in every group.
It's balanced.
There's only a couple which have got.
I don't think there'll be much to come down. I would have thought there's a good chance that Arsenal will be in Gdansk.
Okay.
Book your flights now, guys.
I've got a question for you. Terreira.
Go on.
That's the question.
It's like, but he agitated quite a lot to go back to Italy.
What's happened there?
Is he not happy?
Well, initially it was because he was a Copa America. So arguably he wasn't match fit because he didn't have the full pre-season.
But I mean, even last year, I mean, there were plenty of times last year where Terreira was not picked. And it
fizzled towards the end. Big
carried
time,
on.
Well, I'm pretty sure.
And surely we've
he tried to get out into Italy. He tried to go back to Italy.
The rumour was that Mrs. wanted to go back to Milan or somewhere with nicer shops. No, I'm just saying, because it's fizzled amongst you as panellists. It seems to have fizzled everyone.
Always. Here he was,
the hero of beating Spurs like a year ago. And our super salvation. He's got his little song, Vieira song, and all the rest of it. And
we could have got bloody good money for him if we'd sold him. I mean, we're getting very good bids for him. But it does remind me of Stefan Schwartz, who claimed he needed to move to Italy, back to Italy, because of the weather. And then after a year in Italy, went to Sunderland.
26 million quid's worth of Stefan Schwartz.
Anyway, so, I mean, before we finish, I am going to refer to this, because I know Tim is quite keen to discuss it.
No.
The European Super League proposals from the European Clubs Association, whereby it becomes a little bit more of a closed shop. The question is, A, would Arsenal be in it? And B, should we be fighting against it or scrambling to be included? Obviously, it's bad for the game.
It's terrible for the game. The proposals which were put forward by Agnelli, who, you know, from Juventus, and I think PSG were very involved, and it makes a lot of sense. They are huge clubs in not such big leagues looking to make bigger revenues. But the initial proposals were for a closed league. Literally, you know, no more qualifying depending on your Premier League finish.
They'd even drop the relegation idea.
They were going to have a tiny bit of relegation kind of within to the second European League. I think the bottom six would go down and the top six would come up. But it would mean, if you think, I mean, last season was very entertaining to be an Arsenal fan. You might say it was a hide behind the seat watch. But, you know, because, you know, neither us nor Manchester United nor Chelsea nor Spurs knew until the final few games, even the final game, exactly what was happening. Imagine a Premier League where
it didn't
not
matter.
Got that going on,
yeah.
Where you got guaranteed income even more for the big club for the competitive balance, and then what they want to do with these Super Leagues, it's franchisation really, it's guaranteeing games. They want to play much more group stages. So talking about, at the moment, the Champions League is 8 groups of 4. They're talking about going to 4 groups of 8, just so you create those 14 group stages to get to a last 16. I think most people now don't even think, it's a group stage. I mean, we're recording this while a group stage is going on, and we'll probably look at the results and be interested, but none of us, I expect, is particularly sad about missing it. But come last 16, last... It does deliver the best football, I think, in the world. The best knockout football. The answer is we should fight it if we love football, if we love as much competitive balance as possible. Even if we love going to watch Premier League games at the weekend because they want to move Champions League games in there because you make far more money selling the rights into Asia and other countries. I've got no doubt that that's what the Kroenke ownership is looking to, what the long-term investment is about. They are investors. They bought media rights. This is about moving to the next stage of media right. But the good news is that there's lots of arguing between different sort of status of clubs within the European setup of what's best for the game, what's best for them. And some of those proposals aren't there anymore, but we have to watch very, very carefully, I think, and be ready, not just as Arsenal fans, but to work with other big supporter trusts at Liverpool and United and Spurs and Chelsea and so on, to, you know, to try and fight for the health of the game.
And it could result in the Premier League, teams that have lost interest in winning the title simply playing second 11s effectively, because there's nothing at stake.
Oh, it would really rip the heart out of what the Premier League is about, because at the moment, once you're over the kind of, are you going to win it or not, you've actually got that really interesting battle that comes all the way down to 7th, I think, 6th or 7th, which probably means that right down to 10th or 11th, you're looking at that, and then below 11, you're basically scrambling not to go down. Mm. It's three leagues within one, the Premier League, isn't it? It's can you win it, it's can you get into Europe, and can you stay up? Mm. So it's hugely important that is kept healthy. But also things like games played, it's bad enough if we're changing kickoff times now, but it, you know, well, I think one of the things they've said is that the cups would have to go. Mm. The domestic cups would go, or they'd be downscaled even more. The league would
become under 23 competitions.
Completely under 23, and the FA Cup would have to, you know, I mean, it's getting there now, but lose all of its replays and you know, it would be downgraded even more.
Yeah. Okay. It just reminded me, one of our away games is being played on a Wednesday afternoon, kicking off at something like
3:50. Yeah.
Well, remember that we had the kickoff here at 6.
Changed it though,
no. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember now. Yeah,
but this one's 3:50 in the afternoon. Isn't
well,
it? Yeah. It's because Porto and Braga are both at home at the same time.
Because it is all about the value is through the media, right? So I noticed just before coming down here, just put on the telly, I was actually looking to see what games they were covering later on, forgetting that they've got so many channels now. But they were playing Champions League now.
Yeah.
And I think they stagger it.
They're staggering the games.
Which, in Champions League as well.
You know, so that more people can... Yeah. More people can watch it.
Mm.
You know, for everyone that's just listening and following on this, it's quite hard almost. It's a moving target because they keep changing what they might do. But at some point, we need to hold the clubs to account.
But the nuts of it, surely, wouldn't the Premier League have to approve it?
Well,
as a group of 14... Or 14,
14 or more would have to but it. Then you get, could 5 or 6 threaten to break away? And a lot of people say, who would call whose bluff? Because at the end of the day, it's interesting, it's the FA that put forward, the FA have to nominate who plays in the Champions League. Now, because they are the body that is affiliated to UEFA, which runs it. So there's lots of debate about if the 16... or 15 that were left behind said, go on then, off you go, we're not playing you anymore. Would they be brave enough about that? Or do they think they rely on those, you know, for all the money that the Premier League makes? So nobody quite know who's bottled to a certain extent would go first.
Just bring out Leeds and small clubs like that.
I tend to think there's more power in those 15, 16 than they realise.
I think they'd say, go on, it's sort of...
It'd be more interesting Premier League, wouldn't it?
What was very interesting, you might recall last year there was a lot of noise. There was a lot of noise amongst the so-called, and this might make you laugh, the big championship clubs about breaking away. And do you remember there was quite a lot of fuss, this Derby and Leeds and all of this. What absolutely did for them was the Premier League let them know that if they did that, they wouldn't countenance any form of breakaway, and they'd just let the entry into the Premier League come from League One. And that killed it dead, obviously, because Leeds and Derby and they can break away and have Premier League 2, but Premier League 1 ain't going to do promotion relegation from there. So, but that's a little bit of the case about what the 15 need to do here.
You've got Norwich beating City, I mean, you know.
The other thing that I think where we got a little bit lucky is, because I wouldn't trust Arsenal any more than I'd trust Liverpool, than I'd trust United and these other clubs to go after the money if they could. But the original proposals that Agnelli put forward would have had a maximum of 5 from England in this fixed European Super League. And I'm told that there was a lot of sort of Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea all going, oh shit.
Might be us.
You know, better the devil we know.
Mm. All right, we're going to finish on a light-hearted note. Final contribution from one of our listeners on Twitter. It's chaired opinion, or from the chair. My granddad supported Arsenal. My dad supported Arsenal. I support Arsenal along with my brother. His two boys, my nephews, support Man United.
What?
Is it wrong of me to hate them? Right, I don't think we'll need to answer that one. I am going to wrap up there. So, after this, it is Guna plug time. The first issue of the season will be on sale at the forthcoming home games against Villa and Forest before we produce our next edition, which will be out for the Bournemouth game. You can also buy copies through our store page on the online Guna website, or subscribe there to receive all six issues this season. As ever, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter at GunaPodcast and email GunaPodcast@gmail.com. Many thanks for the questions and topics submitted for today. I think I've name-checked everybody. And with that, it is goodbye from Mike.
Goodbye.
Tim.
Goodbye.
And Simon.
Goodbye.
We will be back in October with another monthly edition. And for those that can't wait, you can follow the more regular offerings hosted by Laith Yusuf. But for now, this is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thank you for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!